Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into something important.
We are. We're looking at the deep impact of childhood trauma.
Yeah. And importantly, how people can start to heal from it. We've got a great source for this conversation.
We do. It's a blog post from Alyssa Haim over at True Roots Therapy.
How therapy can help you move beyond childhood trauma. It lays things out really clearly.
It really does. It's like a map. You know, it doesn't just describe the problem, it points towards solutions.
So our goal, our mission for this deep dive is to unpack how those childhood wounds actually settle in.
Right. Not just as bad memories, but physically in your body, how you see the world.
In the nervous system itself.
Yeah.
And we want to pull out the core ways therapy helps, the mechanisms for change she outlines.
Yeah.
They're four key ones.
Exactly. Four pillars, she calls them. And understanding those is, well, it's powerful.
It really is. Because the basic idea here is, you know, childhood should be safe. It should be about growth.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's marked by trauma, by threat or neglect, those wounds, they don't just vanish.
No, they stick around. They can drive how you act as an adult, often without you even realizing why.
And the healing, it seems, really starts when you stop saying, oh, it wasn't that bad, and start gently looking at the actual impact.
Yeah. That first step, just acknowledging that the pain is real because it shaped how you survived, that's huge. It opens the door to self-compassion.
Okay, so let's dig into that. Section one. How this invisible weight, as you called it, actually shows up in adult life. Because the definition of trauma here is broad, isn't it?
It really is, and that's important. The source makes it clear it's not just about, you know, big catastrophic events, though it includes those.
Right.
It's also about the chronic stuff, like emotional neglect, maybe feeling abandoned, or growing up with a parent struggling with addiction,
right.
Or serious mental illness.
Things that might not leave visible scars, but definitely leave internal ones, like being constantly shamed or silenced.
Exactly. Or just living with constant unpredictability where you were supposed to feel secure. It builds this worldview based on, well, bracing yourself.
Always waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Mm-hmm. The source uses this really relatable example, the successful professional, maybe in their 30s?
Yeah, I know the type. Looks like they have it all figured out, capable, organized.
Totally. High achieving. But underneath, they feel like they're constantly just waiting for something awful to happen.
Even though, objectively, they're safe now.
Right. The external world is secure, but that internal alarm system, it's still ringing nonstop.
And the symptoms can be subtle, can't they? But really draining.
Oh, definitely. Like trouble sleeping, just can't switch off. Or maybe certain things, a smell, a specific tone of voice, just trigger this deep sense of unease, like a gut punch.
Mm-hmm. And avoiding conflict like the plague, even minor disagreements.
Yeah, sacrificing your own needs just to keep the peace because conflict felt incredibly dangerous back then.
So where does that come from? What's the root?
Well, let's take that professional example. Maybe they grew up with a parent whose moods were all over the place, loving one minute, then suddenly cruel or angry the next.
Total chaos.
Exactly. So as a kid, what do? You learn survival skills.
Okay.
You learn, stay small, stay quiet, try to be perfect. Maybe then you'll be safe.
Wow, that sounds exhausting just thinking about it, like walking on eggshells constantly.
It is, because your nervous system literally learned to be a danger detector. It had to scan the environment, predict the shifts, to survive.
And that state of high alert, that's hypervigilance.
That's hypervigilance.
Yeah.
It worked then. It kept you safe. But now, as an adult, the original threat is gone.
But the system's still running that old program. Still scanning, still bracing.
Precisely. You're living in today, but through the lens of a dangerous yesterday.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Which leads perfectly into the next big question, right?
Yeah.
If it happened years ago, and maybe I even understand why I react this way, why can't I just, you know, get over it?
Yes. The get over it myth. This is such a critical point. So many people delay getting help because they minimize what happened.
Right. They tell themselves those things.
Other people had it worse, or it was so long ago, I should be fine by now.
We hear that constantly.
Yeah.
It's almost like a default setting.
It is. But the source really pushes back on that. It insists you don't measure trauma by the event itself. You measure it by the impact.
The impact. On what specifically?
On your sense of safety. On how your nervous system developed, on your ability to trust yourself, trust others. If it's still shaping how you feel and react today, it matters, period.
So it doesn't matter if someone else thinks it wasn't that bad. If my stomach clenches every time my boss looks at me funny, that impact is real and present.
Exactly right. And that ongoing impact, it has profound psychological results.
Like what?
Well, developing those people-pleasing strategies we mentioned, trying to manage everyone else's feelings, struggling with self-worth, even if you're outwardly successful, that feeling of not good enough just sticks around.
And how does this play out in relationships or just emotionally?
It often leads to adult relationships feeling confusing, maybe unsafe. And internally, you might have this relentless inner critic constantly putting you down. And your emotions, they can feel either way too big, totally overwhelming.
Okay, let's pause there. Way too big. The source mentions emotional flooding, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a clinical term. What does that actually feel like?
Yeah, emotional flooding. It's basically when your body's threat response goes from 0 to 60 over something relatively minor.
So like a 10% problem gets a 100% reaction.
Pretty much. Think back to that professional example. If home was chaotic, there was no reliable danger scale, everything could be a threat.
Okay.
So now, as an adult, a small disagreement at work, maybe a slightly critical email, it can trigger that same full-blown fight-or-flight response. Total overwhelm, just like facing that unpredictable parent as a child.
Wow. So the system's calibration is just off.
Yeah.
Because it learned maximum response was necessary for survival.
Exactly. And the flip side of that coin is the other extreme. Feeling numb, emotionally flat.
Right, disconnected.
Mm-hmm. A lot of survivors come to therapy saying they just don't feel much or they can't connect to their feelings.
And that's also a survival thing.
Absolutely. It's a protective adaptation. If showing feelings, any feelings, was unsafe or punished in childhood, the system learns to just shut them down, turn the volume way down.
So therapy is about creating a space safe enough to maybe turn that volume back up slowly.
That's a huge part of it, which brings us right to the mechanisms of change. How does therapy actually help rewire these deep-seated survival patterns?
Okay, let's get into it. The four pillars of healing from the source.
Right. And the foundation for all of this is the therapy space itself. It has to be a place where your story is heard, truly heard, respected, not minimized, not rushed.
That consistency is key, isn't it?
It's everything. It allows pillar one to happen, making the invisible visible.
Making the invisible visible sounds profound. What does it involve?
It's more than just recounting facts. It's about naming the emotional truth of what happened.
Okay.
The source notes that clients are often carrying so much they're not even aware of hidden guilt, maybe shame, these automatic survival strategies.
So they just do without thinking.
Exactly. So through gentle reflection, talking with a therapist consistently, you start to notice the patterns, the triggers. You start to see, oh, that's why I react that way. And crucially, you start identifying where your core needs for safety, for connection, weren't met.
So it's like drawing a map of your own internal world. Understanding the why behind the what.
That's a great way to put it. And once that map starts taking shape, you can move towards pillar two, which is often overlooked but vital. Reclaiming the body.
Why the focus on the body?
Yeah.
Isn't trauma about memories and thoughts?
Well, yes, but not only. Trauma doesn't just live in the mind, as the saying goes. It gets trapped in the nervous system, in the body itself.
How does that show up physically?
That constant bracing we talked about.
Yeah.
It shows up as chronic tension, maybe in your jaw, your shoulders, persistent headaches, stomach problems, or just a general sense of feeling disconnected from your own physical sensations, like you're living from the neck up.
So you can understand it all intellectually.
But your body is still acting like the threat is happening right now.
Okay, so the goal isn't just thinking differently, it's feeling differently physically. How does therapy address that?
This is where specialized trauma-informed approaches come in. The source mentions things like EMDR.
Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Right. And somatic experiencing. These methods are designed to work directly with the body's stored trauma responses.
Can you give us a quick idea of how something like EMDR works without getting too technical?
Sure. Think of it like this. When something really traumatic happens, the memory doesn't get processed and filed away neatly like a normal memory. It gets stuck, fragmented in the brain's alarm center.
Okay.
EMDR uses bilateral stimulation like guided eye movements or sometimes sounds or taps alternating side to side while you briefly focus on aspects of the memory. It seems to help the brain process those stuck pieces.
Like helping the brain file it correctly.
Yeah, kind of like unstucking it so it can move from feeling like a current threat to being integrated as a past event that's over. It helps the nervous system finally get the memo. The danger has passed.
It's like recalibrating the smoke detector so it doesn't go off for burnt toast.
Exactly. A really good analogy. You're teaching the nervous system it's safe now. And that feeling of physical safety, actually feeling it in your body, that's the bridge to pillar three, rebuilding trust in relationships.
Okay, but this seems like a huge hurdle. If you've learned your whole life that relationships are scary or unreliable, how does talking to one person, a therapist, actually change that deep script? What's the mechanism?
It's a great question. The mechanism is the relationship itself. It's the consistency, the reliability, the radical acceptance.
Radical acceptance.
Meaning the therapist provides a safe, non-judgmental space week after week. Trauma often leaves you feeling deeply suspicious, maybe expecting abandonment or criticism.
Right.
The therapeutic relationship becomes a corrective experience. It's a model for healthy attachment built on safety, respect, consistency. There are no hidden agendas.
So you experience being seen, heard, cared for reliably. And that experience starts to challenge the old belief that people can't be trusted.
Precisely. It provides these small, repeated moments where the old script gets contradicted. You might test the therapist, consciously or not, expecting them to react like people did in the past, get impatient, judge you. But when the therapist stays consistent, calm, and caring, that lived experience starts to rewire the expectation. It teaches you, maybe for the very first time, what safe connection actually feels like.
That makes sense. You need that foundation of feeling safer with at least one person before you can tackle pillar four. Changing the inner narrative. Because as you said, if trust in others is low, that inner critic is usually loud.
Oh, incredibly loud. In almost every case of childhood trauma, whether it was abuse or neglect or chaos, the child's mind makes sense of it by blaming itself.
It must be my fault.
Exactly. If I were better, quieter, smarter, this wouldn't be happening. If you grew up hearing criticism or maybe just silence where you needed support, you internalize that. You develop this harsh inner voice.
And that's the voice that, as an adult, keeps saying, I'm broken or I'm not good enough, I'm unlovable.
That's the one. And therapy goes right after that voice. Not by arguing with it directly, necessarily, but by helping you reframe the whole story.
No.
By shifting the focus from self-blame to understanding your adaptations, moving from that painful thought, I'm broken, towards a more compassionate truth.
Which is.
I adapted the best way I knew how to survive incredibly difficult, maybe impossible circumstances.
Wow. That feels like a huge shift right there. From flaw to survival skill.
It is huge because it replaces that deep, paralyzing shame with curiosity and self-compassion.
So instead of beating yourself up for being hypervigilant,
you can start to observe it with kindness. Ah, there's that scanning again. My nervous system is trying to protect me because this situation feels unpredictable, like childhood did. Okay, that reaction makes sense, but I'm safe now.
That practice, that self-compassion, that's what quiets the inner critic over time.
That's exactly it. It takes practice, of course, but it's incredibly powerful.
This has been, well, incredibly illuminating, really mapping out the mechanics. So just to kind of synthesize, this whole therapeutic journey, it's not about endlessly dredging up the past or blaming people.
No, not at all.
It's about making sense of what happened deeply in your body, in your relationships, in your thoughts, so you can stop reliving it now.
Mm-hmm. Stop letting the past dictate the present.
It sounds like it's about finally giving yourself the attention, the care, the understanding that maybe you desperately needed back then but couldn't get.
That's beautifully put. And that connects back to what we said about emotional numbness or flatness. That was a necessary defense.
Right.
Therapy provides the safety and the tools to gently, slowly unlock that system, to reclaim the full spectrum of feeling and experience that had to be shut down for you to survive.
So those small moments of feeling something new or feeling safe in a connection, they don't magically fix everything overnight.
No, it's gradual.
Well, they open a door.
Right.
They create possibilities for a fuller, less constricted life.
Absolutely. And that brings us to the final thought from the source, which really sums it up. It says, therapy can help give you back what was shut down for survival.
Give you back what was shut down for survival.
Yeah. If any of this resonates, if you recognize yourself in these patterns, maybe the kindest thing you can do is explore that possibility. The chance for care, for attention, and maybe, just maybe, the chance to live more freely outside those old walls the past forced you to build.